So how to optimize? These are easy tips that you can implement today. But let's face it, none of us, I don't think, want to spend hours working in HTML code. I could be wrong, but I know I don't want to. So here's how to optimize your website without having to do all of that. All pages should have headlines that include the topics and the keywords that you're wanting to address. So the headline of that page should have the topics and the keywords you're wanting to talk about in that page. Very clear and understand. So here is the headline. Free ebook, the essential step-by-step guide to internal marketing. Right there. And guess what the page deals with? The building blocks for succeeding with marketing on the web. Bold text. Everything is dealing with that headline. Does that make sense? So that's the first thing you want to do. Every headline should include what that page is going to talk about, and it should have those nice keywords that you know people are going to be searching for. So pregnancy options, medical effects of pregnancy, whatever, those should be in your headlines. All URLs should include the title of the page. So for example, carenet.org/free-resources. Guess what that page has? Free resources. That's not where you're going to learn about CareNet. That's not our about page. That's not where you're going to find a pregnancy center. That's not where you're going to subscribe to a blog. It's where you're going to get our free resources. It should also exclude numbers. We've all seen where there's like 30115 and all that. Search engines hate it.
And just a little thing, but it's important, is if you have multiple words like free resources, separating them by a dash is the best way to go.
Yep.
So you don't want them to all just run together as one word or use underscores or whatever. You just want to use just the dash, free dash resources.
And it makes it easy for the person to read it, and it makes it easy for the bots to read it. And a happy bot means a happy SEO. So you can write that one down.
That's right.
All right.
But robots don't have emotions.
Well, one day they will.
Yeah.
All pages should have meta descriptions. And neither Vince nor I have ever met one we didn't like.
Yes.
Less than 150 character descriptions of the page. So, for example, why the Big Bang Theory became pro-life, there's the title. Look at the link, why the Big Bang Theory became pro-life, with those little dashes. Here's the meta description. Whether it is Doritos or the Big Bang Theory, it is far easier to be pro-life than it is to be pro-choice. Would you click on that? You don't have to answer. It's okay. But
we won't be offended.
We won't be offended if you say no. But the idea of the meta description is you want to give them that hook, because you've only got them for a few seconds. So what is that? A most important way, and it may be a quote from the article. You might have a snippy, pithy quote. Sometimes you might be sitting there writing the meta description based on what the article talks about because there's nothing small enough to fit in, and that's fine. I will tell you, for me at least, where I end up spending a lot of time isn't necessarily writing the blog post. It's trying to come up with the title and with that meta description, because that's your most important hook. And you want to get that one right. So don't worry if you spend a good bit of time trying to come up with one. Yes?
So kind of your best breakdown for SEO, basically all of the stuff that you do that Google
bots
react to. It's not
yes.
You,
you do not need to pay for any of this. This is free. And you do not need to hire a marketing firm that will charge you $100 to $200 per hour, because that's what they will do, to sit down and do this for you. You can do that if you'd like, but I like to spend that money on Facebook ads. Mm-hmm. So use Anchor. I'm sorry.
SEO kind of like, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, SEO was like this thing, and like there was a million different companies that were doing SEO for you, and it was like this big secret like formula that only, you know, these guys that got paid $100 an hour knew how to do, but it's really not that hard. A lot of it is just, it's common sense.
Mm-hmm.
And most platforms where you're hosting websites, like we use HubSpot, and I'm sure other ones are very similar, it's all kind of right there for you, because
yeah.
There's fields where you're putting all of these things in. There's fields where, you know, you're putting the page title, the URL, the meta description, the keywords, and so it's actually asking you all of the questions that the $100 an hour guy would say, here's all the things that you need to know. But the website itself is saying, just enter all this information, and then the SEO is going to kind of sort of take care of itself in that sense. There are a couple of things that, you know, you might need to read something like an ebook or something like that. Like if you go to HubSpot.com, they have a lot of free downloads that teach you how to do this stuff. It's pretty simple. Like, I don't think I already mentioned. For example, you want to make sure that you use H1 headers on your web pages.
Right here. There you go. It's perfect. That was perfect.
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you.
I looked. No, I'm kidding.
It's perfect.
Yeah, but stuff like that where there's kind of that second level of stuff that's a little bit more detailed, but for the most part, it's all stuff that you can figure out on your own.
Yeah. No, and this is something, like I said, when I first, I mean, even 5 months ago when I was thinking of SEO, I had that fear of, but it really isn't. It's not something that's rocket science to adapt. And something else I should mention when we're, now the train just flew away. Anyone see that movie by Pixar, the Inside Out with the train of thought? That is so me. The train just goes right off the tracks. Maybe it'll come back. So optimizing this for SEO, it really is just common sense things. Use anchor text to link to other internal external pages. So what anchor text is instead of putting the URL, http://, you take text in your blog post and you make it a URL. All right? Now I remember what I was going to say. Topics or keywords. When you're creating a blog post, WordPress, HubSpot, all these platforms will allow you to select keywords that this blog post contains, right? Do include keywords that are actually contained by the post. Why say this? I was talking with a marketing friend of mine, and he told me a story he just come across. Apparently, it's considered one of the greatest examples of black hat marketing. So black hat means it's not really what you should do. But JCPenney, on every page, whenever they did a post, put a whole bunch of keywords in there that had nothing to do with the post, but they wanted to drive up on search engines. So they put, Tommy Hilfiger, they put that on every single page as a keyword. It got so powerful on JCPenney's website that if you typed in a Google search for Tommy Hilfiger, JCPenney would appear higher on the search engine results than Tommy Hilfiger did. So what Google did was literally punish JCPenney by sending all their results downstream for faking the system that way. So now the bots actually scan to make sure that your keywords match what's being talked about in the article. So all that to say, don't go keyword crazy and say, well, I want to make sure that if someone's searching for abortion and for pregnancy options and all these other things, that this page is going to come up if you're not talking about those things in the page. Does that make sense? All right. Headline tags, just like it was said, different size bold headings within the body of the post. H1 is what you want to use. This allows the reader to know what's important, which is vital, and allows the bot to know what's important. And now, websites. These are two actual restaurants. Which one of these restaurants would you eat at for dinner? This one, right?
Depends on what your budget is, I guess.
Even if your budget wasn't that great and you had to choose between McDonald's prices, would you go here or McDonald's? Let's be honest. Probably McDonald's, right? I mean, look at that. That's just sketchy looking. I feel like I'm going to, get mugged or something. It just doesn't look good. All right. Websites are the same way. The days when people wanted the things that were blinking, I'm not even sure anyone wanted those blinking things, but anyway, the days when they wanted those websites and those pages that you had to constantly scroll through and you had the backgrounds that were really clashing with the text, those days are long gone. The days when websites could get by without being mobile optimized, who here has ever looked at a website on their phone where they've had to do this? You know what I'm talking about? The spread of death where you're like, what does that say? You're searching for the little text box and you're trying to click and then type in. Don't do that. Because the people who are having, those 18 to 26-year-olds who are having the abortions, who are having the pregnancy decisions, they're using their smartphone or their tablet a lot more than they're using a laptop. So good versus bad, all right? So we're going to show you all three, the good, the bad, and the ugly, starting with the good. Oh, look, it's CareNet.
Don't worry, we redeem ourselves later.
Yeah, don't worry. We will. We're going to. I wanted to make sure that you guys could see where we've come from. So we're going to start where we are. I'll just show you where we are now, but you're gonna see in a moment where we've come from. So here's our main site.
Magic,
it just appeared. If you double tap it, it should resize to fit. Like double click on the bar, top bar. Okay. All right. So we've got a hero image that comes across, a vote for life, because right now we're doing the Value Voter Summit push that's taking place in D.C., and you see the image changes. You see a great statistic there. All right, review the latest, you know, impact report.
That.
We do, but that's last year's number.
Oh my gosh, we have the new number.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
it's 70,000 higher now.
Yeah, it is. It's really awesome. So here's our blog, so you can go Abundant Life blog and see in there. So CareNet's annual national conference just kicked off, so you can see different posts. So that's the layout of our new site. All right, clean.
And by new, we actually mean 20 months old.
20 months old now, but when you see the when I start getting to the bad, you'll see why I said new. So that's the good. Now let me show you. Let me go back here and show you. So that was the good. Let me show you the bad. I've got a little Star Wars theme going here. All right. Here we go. This is our old website. So even our national headquarters, you can see just very bland background.
Are we going to talk about why it's bad?
Go right ahead. Start jumping in.
Sure. I don't want to, you know, take over. I do this to him all the time at work, so it's more.
This is how we roll.
More of the same. Actually, if you turn that off, will this? Oh, this is already on. Okay, good. Just for recording purposes. I'll switch back and forth between the two. It's hard to really kind of break this down in a ton of detail, but a couple of the principles that I think are the sort of things that you just kind of notice, and then there's like the things that are really specific. So I would say in general, the first thing I noticed about our old website is you really don't know where you're supposed to go. Mm-hmm. There's just too much stuff going on. There's no focal point really. There's a menu here. There's a menu here. There's a menu here. There's stuff that looks sort of important here. There should be an image there, but this is an archive. Yeah. And then there's like these things here. It's and everything is like exactly the same size and color, and it's just like what exactly are you supposed like? You just don't know where to go. Our new website. You know, I'm actually gonna take so. Our new website is much clearer. Now, let's go back to the homepage. So there's really, I mean, there is sort of two menus, but these are more kind of call to action buttons that are like the most important things that we want people to do. And then there's really just the one main navigation menu at the top. The hero graphic is obviously really big and bold, and so that gives you some clear direction about what it is that we want you to do. And so, you know, so the above the fold, so to speak. So on this one, like everything was like above the fold, right? Like the entire website was above the fold. So it was like, no, okay, what's the priority here? Here there's like a kind of a definable above the fold, the top menu and the hero graphic, right? And then below the fold, there's kind of the second third of the page, so to speak. There's a very clear what we do paragraph, right? So that since 2008, blah, blah, blah. So that's like a very just clear, like, what does this organization actually do under, I think, a pretty catchy headline. And then we just have three very clear, big, bold calls to action for things that we want people to be able to do. And then kind of the bottom third of the site is links directly into our blogs. And so the good thing about this is that as we're posting new blogs on each of the four blogs, this automatically gets refreshed, and so there's always new content going up on the homepage because these four posts are constantly changing on each of the four blogs. And so you have every day when somebody comes to our site, there's going to be something new on the homepage for them to click through to, and that'll just take you right to the. So if you guys haven't heard, for example, about CareNet's National Conference, you might want to check that out.
Great
event. Artie Coolidge is going to be there.
Vince, we're going to do a song and dance. You know.
That's right. So, yeah, and then let's see if there's more bad that I could talk about here. To be honest, the colors are pretty hideous. It's not very visually appealing. There's no, I don't know what the image was. But yeah, there's a lot of space, so just the layout's bad.
Mm-hmm.
There's no compelling images of people.
Mm-hmm.
People connect to other people, and so just having obviously cute babies and families and faces for people to connect to is incredibly important. So you want to have as many faces on your site as possible, especially babies. Well, you guys can't do babies on the client site. Donor side, you could definitely babies, lots of babies, cute babies. Is like, we've tried lots of different things with our donors. I mean, we've obviously been doing this for a long time and have been doing direct mail and all this for a very long time.
Babies bring the money.
And we've experimented with different stuff, and it always just comes back to, you know what, just put the babies back on there, and it always outperforms everything. And so donors want to see cute babies that were saved. I mean, that's good.
But on your client side, a powerful image of a woman trying to make a decision.
Right. Yep.
A woman who could really be kind of stand in as the every woman.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe ambiguous in terms of her race, ambiguous in terms of her age, but facing that decision. Put someone the client can put themselves in the shoes of. That right there.
So, we use a lot. Whoops. Oh, that website, that post doesn't look right.
Oh, that's because it's loading still. It's a Storyfy post.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, I'll go back. Just the images. You'll note the images. Just faces, people's faces.
There we go. So I'll be the first to tell you, when it comes to the website side, I prefer the marketing to the actual web design thing. I'm kind of in the place where it's the same with interior decorating. My wife will decorate and I'll say, that looks nice. I can't really necessarily explain why it looks nice. I just know it looks nice. So we've shown you the good, we've shown you the bad, and now I'm going to pick on the ugly. And if you guys happen to know who created this website, I think it's a pretty low chance you would. But if you do, don't take it personally. This is from the preterist archive.com. So that's
I don't even know what that means. What is it?
The website. It's preterism is an eschatological perspective. Take a look at this wonderful website. And I'll show you, it just keeps going. It's like eternity itself. It just doesn't end. You just keep going and going. But here's my favorite part. You see? Then you can just, it can just make it disappear. All right, so obviously you've got clashing images, clashing text, horrible background.
There's like 18 different fonts.
There's 18 different fonts. And look at all the CTAs. But they have Facebook for the latest work. Isn't that wonderful? I am afraid to click on it.
You click into their Facebook page.
But you see, and it just goes on and on and on. But we've all seen websites like this, right?
I think I made one when I was in college.
Now, this here is not what a center's website should ever look like. And I want to stress, if you feel like your center's website could be improved, that's a very common conversation we've had, and we have tools to help you do that. Because at the end of the day, there is two places that I believe in a pregnancy center. I'm just going to say my little soapbox pitch here. There's two places where I think a pregnancy center really needs to pay attention to detail, because at the end of the day, we're in a service to clients at your center. You're helping clients. And so when a person comes and I'm wanting to be hospitable to them and I invite them to my home, I'm going to try to pick up the living room, right? I knew as a kid whenever we were going to have guests, because my mom, for hours before they'd be coming, would be saying, clean up this, clean up that, clean up your room. And I'm like, but their room's messy too. But it doesn't matter. And in the pregnancy center business, we can't say, well, Planned Parenthood has terrible clinics. Then the reality is they do. Right now, they're in a patient improvement program. We wrote about it on our website. Because according to their own auditors, their clinics, they're ugly and literally stink, like there's odor in the clinics. And so we can't look at that and say, well, we don't need to worry about it. We need to take care of that and that space. So I believe personally that the welcome area needs to be warm and inviting and with the client in mind. So here's a hint. Our church is going through this right now. Our church welcome area looked like a funeral home. So you know those floral pattern couches? You know what I'm talking about. You know the big doilies? You know those old lights with the lampshades with all the flowers on it? And you're just like, oh, flowers. And the flower scented this and all that. Those are going out for a clean, modern look. The same with websites. Before a person ever sets foot in your clinic, they're going to set foot on your website. Make it with them in mind. And so to help with that, here's some little good website homepage design tips. And all this is from HubSpot. We've talked a lot about HubSpot. You don't even realize it. But HubSpot is just an incredible resource, and it's free. You do not have to buy their platform to take advantage of all their free learning resources. One, a website will clearly answer who I am, what I do, and what you, the visitor, should do here. Those three questions need to be clearly answered by your home page. If it takes them four clicks to find out that information, you have a problem. If you make your visitor search for it, you have a problem. They'll likely never return. Think about that for a moment. They won't come back. The living room was dirty. They're not coming back. Sometimes I wish that would happen, but it resonates with the target audience, all right? What age has the most abortions? Would they feel comfortable on your website? This is a serious question to consider. Three, communicates a compelling value proposition. Once you get them to the homepage, give them a reason to stay on the website. Show them why they should learn from you rather than Planned Parenthood down the road about their pregnancy. Show them that you care. Show them that you're factual. Show them that you're compassionate. Show them that you care more about them than the decision they're going to make. The decision's important, but they're the most important. Because either way, they're going to be spending their life with the results of that decision. So you got to show them that care. All right? Number four, it's optimized for multiple devices. I keep saying this. Do not make it so that it's just designed for Windows computers or Macs. Make it so it'll work on any device. Test your website on multiple devices. If you haven't gone to your website lately in a different browser, try it in a different browser. See what it looks like. Do not use animation, overly complicated pop-ups, etc., that'll get in the way of browsing. The more things that are flashing for the person's attention, the more friction you're applying, another marketing term, friction that you're applying that's preventing them from getting to the destination you want them to get to quickly. The more friction they have, the less likely it is they're going to arrive there. 75% of U.S. online adults use two or more devices connected to the Internet, and 67% switch devices while completing a common task. Did you know the average donation on a website begins on one device and ends on another?
Can you explain that, please?
Yeah. So what I mean by that, based on the data I just saw,
people
will start reading through on the post that's calling for the donation and giving them the reason or the email or whatever it is, and then they'll make the donation on a second device.
Oh.
So the donation will be completed on the device, but the process that got them there will have taken place on more than one device.
I do that when I shop
online. Exactly. You know what I mean? You're sitting there at work. You're waiting for an email to come in. Your boss isn't looking. Sorry, boss. And you're searching on Amazon, you know, and you find the product. And then you go on your phone on your commute home and you buy it. People do that all the time. They're going to do it with your website too. So they may not schedule the appointment on the same device that they were reading about it. Everything should include CTAs. This is something we've been more diligent about on all of our blog posts. A clear call to action on every blog post. Because we're trying to drive that action for the person using it. Remember, the goal of the homepage is to compel visitors to dig deeper in the website, move them further down the funnel. An example of a CTA, schedule a free pregnancy test today. If a woman, if you got a post talking about how do you know you're pregnant, don't end it with subscribe to our blog. Because that's not on the person who's trying to figure out their pregnant's mind. That's not helping them. Schedule a free pregnancy test today. That helps them. Six, your website's always changing. We're getting ready to update our homepage, and we're having meetings right now to discuss what the new layout will look like, so stay tuned. New content, new blogs, et cetera, change based on audience insight and feedback. It's a constantly evolving system, and it has to be. That means we're never out of a job, so that's job security, right? That's kind of cool, exciting. It will always employ great overall design.
Let's go back for one second. And for number six, I think rough, the shelf life of a website is about 3 years. 3 years.
Exactly.
So you want to change it every 3 years. We're right now just going through a process just to change our home page.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've just learned a lot in the last year and a half since we've launched the site about what people care about and what they want to click on and that sort of thing. And so we're just going to do some adjustments and modifications just to our homepage, but the rest of the site is going to stay exactly the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we're tweaking some, we've already started tweaks on our blog posts themselves. So if you've been a frequent reader, you'll notice that our CTAs on the right-hand side of the blog page have changed. We used to have 3 CTAs, subscribe now, donate now, and something else. I'm trying to remember. I think it was a free download ebook. And now we have a smart CTA that actually changes based on a person's activity with our website. So it's an image that will change based on the user's activity. And we smart stuff is awesome. It's something that's very easy to do if you have HubSpot. If you don't, there's other things you can do. But anyway, all that to say, those changes are things that will have different shelf lives depending on what you're looking at. Yes?
Well,
you don't.
For a blog, I think if you have like 3 posts a week, you're probably doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it depends on how fast of a writer they are, but I think you know most people could probably write a blog post in, let's say, 2 hours. Maybe.
Yeah.
So 6 hours a week, you could probably get 3. You could probably get 3 blog posts up. And then you're gonna have to obviously spend a little bit of time promoting the blog posts and making sure they're being posted on your social media channels and pushed out in some way, shape, or form. So. You know, 10, maybe 8 hours a week, which is, I guess, you know, that's one day a week out of a 40-hour work week where they would have to be dedicated to that. Yeah, go ahead.
Just to that, too, a very common thing that a lot of times people do is they'll sit down in a day and write 3 blogs.
Exactly.
And schedule them to launch at different times, which
that
way you're not
writing day.
Every day thinking about, okay, what's the next blog?
Sure.
You have like one day a week or something like that where you're going.
Right.
Yep.
Blog.
And it doesn't have to be one person either.
Right.
Guest contributions are a wonderful thing. People in your organization, and by guest, I'm not meaning external. You've got that receptionist who's sitting there and has this, there's a phrase, old Western phrase, burr in the saddle. You know, there's this desire, this thing that lit them up about something with pregnancy, and they want to write about it. Let them write about it. Edit it, definitely. Make sure it matches the best practices, definitely. But, you know, let them write that. Yes?
Could you just go over the HubSpot thing again so I know, like, what is it? Just one more time.
Sure. Well, HubSpot website, you can go to it's HubSpot, HubSpot, HubSpot.com. And they are a marketing CRM platform, content database platform, that you can purchase. But on their website, they have a whole knowledge base of articles. Here you go. Blogs. So you can go to their blog right over there, and you can learn all about marketing and sales techniques for free.
So I'm subscribed to their marketing blog.
7 ways you're letting guilt sabotage your work. How schools can find budget for inbound. The best time of day to do everything according to science. These are awesome posts. Every single one of them will help you become a better marketer. And they're free. Now, if you wanted to purchase their software, you can completely track, manage everything from social media output of your website to blogs of your website. And if you choose to build your website on their platform.
Look at this one. 5 tips to improve your nonprofit's email strategy. So they have, the only thing about their marketing blog is be prepared to get about 5 emails every day because they produce a lot of content. But most of it's very good. And even if you just delete 90% of them, you know, that 1 or 2 a week, that's worth your time. It's definitely worth it because, you know, it's free. So, yeah.
Yep. No, so we've loved it. It's been a great resource to us.
So we basically have our website. Our website is built and hosted on HubSpot's platform. We send our emails out through there. We manage some of our social media through HubSpot because you can do all your social media through HubSpot. So... scheduling posts, you know, monitoring, et cetera.
Is it affordable or is it expensive?
Well, you know, it depends on how many contacts that you have in your database. So they, and then there's three different levels of it. So there's like just the regular one, and then there's professional and then enterprise. So if you just go with the regular one and you don't have like, you know, 50,000 contacts in your database, it could be pretty reasonable. It's still, you know, it's fairly expensive. Yeah, let's see what they actually say on there. I don't actually know what it would be for like a smaller.
Yeah, basic is $200 a month for 100 contacts, and then you pay $100 more a month for 1,000 more for each 1,000 more contacts. So contacts would be like your donors, email, clients, stuff like that.
So.
No, not Facebook. Not Facebook.
It would only count email addresses that you have in stored in HubSpot.
So any email address that you're using through HubSpot to collect.
Look,
HubSpot.
We already got the live chat asking us, so you could.
They're on the ball. I mean, they have grown tremendously. One of the things that's really nice about HubSpot, I'll just say this from my personal experience, I've only worked with them for 5 months, but whenever I've had an issue and I've talked to them, they're very personable people. And all the stuff that they're marketing, they're doing themselves.
Yep.
So the sales team for HubSpot that's trying to get me to buy is using the same stuff that I'm supposed to be using to try to get people to donate. So when I run into an issue, it's an issue they've either run into or are going to run into. So they're constantly changing and growing and improving. And there's a humility with them that I've appreciated. Mm-hmm. So I'll hear them say, we just experimented with this and found out that it works this way, and it's really cool. You should try it. And I like that because it's just kind of a fun attitude.
Yeah. And that's a good question. You could probably try to get replicate it in some ways. There would definitely have to be code adjustment and things like that. That would have to be done by somebody who knows HubSpot's language, their coding language. It's called Content Optimization System, is what they call it, COS. So if you're, what is your website built on now? But like, what, do you know who's like hosting
it?
WordPress or?
That's the company. It's called
Pregnancy Care Website. Oh, it is. Oh, okay. Yeah, so it tells you what I know. Yeah, I mean. You probably have to find a web developer that knows the HubSpot platform so that they could basically take the code of your current website and recode it, so to speak, so that it basically functions on the HubSpot platform. But it would probably, I would imagine it would be cheaper than building it entirely from scratch. In HubSpot, it is fairly pricey and very robust, and there's a lot going on there, but you can kind of cobble together stuff. And do kind of a quasi HubSpot without using them. So if you're using MailChimp and SurveyMonkey and WordPress for your website and different tools, you're not going to quite be able to do everything, but you can get to.
You don't have to host your website on HubSpot to take advantage of the tools they have. It's just the integrations are a lot more robust when everything's under the one umbrella. So like with our website, since we've implemented HubSpot, we've been able to do things like see if your specific individual's gone to our website, all the pages you've been to, how many times you've been on those pages, how long you've spent on those pages. We're able to change what our website shows you based on your activity, based on your life cycle stage, whether you're a donor or just or someone who's downloaded an ebook. We're able to create personas. Based on that, exactly.
Google Analytics will give you all the same data, but with HubSpot, you can actually tell HubSpot, if this person has already been to this page, change this image on this page to this other image. Yeah.
And then we
Or even, which is even better and more kind of wild, is we're actually starting to collect demographic data on folks. So, of course, voluntarily, we say, do you want to take this survey? And if they do, they give us their, so we'll get age. And then we can actually build a persona based on that demographic data. And then we can actually have stuff on our website change based on their age, for example. So we can say, if they go to our homepage and they're a single 24-year-old, entirely different set of images, and we're going to ask you to download this thing. And so you can actually essentially have 2, 3, 4 different websites
on based on all that.
Based on who the person is who comes to your website.
I mean, the craziness of it, and it just doesn't just extend to websites. It extends to emails. So when I open my email campaign, I'm doing a donor-based email campaign, I can change the signature block, the header image, every element of that email based on the persona of the person who's receiving it. So this goes way beyond just, you know, F name for first name and changing that. This goes into completely crafting your message of the website so it'll have the most effect. So right now, if you go to one of our blogs, you'll see on the right-hand side a really cool graphic for one of our ebooks. It's a CTA, graphical CTA. If you've already downloaded that ebook, you're going to see a second ebook's graphical CTA. If you've already downloaded that one, you'll see a third type of eCTA. So we're not sending a message of some to someone who's already bought in and given a micro yes on that message. Does that make sense? So the power of it is really cool and exciting and stuff we're still just implementing. Now that we're open there, could you go to the store page, CareNet Store, and go to the website template page. We wanted to make it easy for you as a pregnancy center to bring your website into the 21st century if it's not already there. So we have these templates.
How many folks in the room know about these website templates? Just about everyone? Okay.
Excellent. Excellent resources for you. The price for what you're getting, because it's not just a template, I think you also get some customer support and implementation support in there, is tremendous.
Has anyone actually bought one of these in this room? Maybe, yeah. We worked through some glitches, and the process is much smoother now. We actually have a new person who's building the websites, and I've actually known her for 10 years. She's incredible. Actually, she lives in Florida. Don't hold that against her. You can hold it against Artie now. How many people here are actually from Florida in the room? Oh, only one Floridian. How about that? Yeah, so, or two. So essentially you pay $500 to have a brand new website that's really well
SEO optimized, image optimized, mobile optimized, everything we just talked about optimized for this.
Sorry for the little commercial there, but we couldn't resist. There's a question back there. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. These? Yes.
No.
You can change them yourself. That's actually one of the benefits of it. Is that they're the platform that they're built on makes it pretty easy for anyone to be able to make basic edits, like changing out images, changing text, that sort of thing. It's all pretty straightforward.
You don't have to be an HTML coder, so.
Oh, what is it? What is it called? Light CMS?
Yeah, it's not Light CMS. So I won't sit on your
server. Just so happens we have the expert right back there, so it's perfect.
Yeah.
So, like I said, a little shameless plug for it.
We have three different versions that you can do a little bit of customization for up front. Not a ton, obviously, because it's a template, but you could pick images and things like that. And then we're going to be adding new templates, I think one a year every year. So probably this fall we'll have another new one out. I think probably in the neighborhood of, I don't know, about 50? Maybe not quite that many, but somewhere around 50 of our affiliates have actually implemented one of these websites. Or maybe it's like 40, somewhere around there, but... they're starting to catch on.
Questions? The surveys want to be built on the website. You would use something like SurveyMonkey. That's actually what we use. And SurveyMonkey is very affordable
and you would just
very
be
robust.
Able to link over to that from here. Yeah.
Great questions. So if you're looking for an easy solution to fix some of those website woes, that'll be a way to do it. CareNet templates, and now...
Am I doing converting? No, you're still doing converting.
They're still stuck with me.
Everyone is just waiting for me to...
I know, they're just begging. I'm sorry, you're almost free of me, I promise.
You know what, is this a... Well, let me just see how much more we have. Okay, yeah, so slides, and then we'll take another
perfect.
10-minute break.
Yep, take another 10-minute break, and then we'll just wrap up with the end. Yeah. So CTAs, real quickly, calls to action. We've already talked about these. Eye-catching design. You want to make them pop off the page there. All right? So here's an example. Size, 225 pixels wide, 45 pixels high. It's a good size you can use. Copy that'll make people want to act more than just submit. That's kind of boring. All right? Use actionable words that grab the reader's attention. Activate. There's been multiple studies that have found that CTAs with the word activate performed very well among millennials. Activate, launch, engage, etc. These are words that will help out. Clear.
The funny thing about the word submit is like, what am I submitting to?
Exactly. Like, what am I? And let's face it, we Americans don't like submission, number one, millennials especially. So activate, launch. Clear value proposition. What will actually happen when I push the big red button? I can tell you right now, based on the studies I've seen, hundreds of websites, major organizations use bland wording that's completely undefined as to what happens when you click the CTA. So you just see email address, submit. Well, for what? What am I getting if I do that? Why should I do that? Give a clear value proposition. Join our mailing list. Guess what? Join our mailing list and submit does not perform very well. Because people, when they hear that, hear another mailing list, another email that's just going to be recycled. Give me something more. So when you go to HubSpot, they're going to say, get the best marketing advice from the experts in the business in your inbox every week for free. Oh, submit, activate, launch, etc. Give them a clear reason. Target the right page on your website. Ideally, a landing page. This is aligned with one stage in the sales cycle, and if the CTA is on a page for first-time visitors, don't have it linked to something that's the last step. So if you've got a page that's just explaining to a potential donor what you do at a very high level, don't suddenly jump to the bottom ask, donate $10,000 now. No. You've got to work your way down the funnel to get them there, or up the funnel, depending on the inversion you're using. All right? Landing page. So you want your CTAs ideally to link to this. It's any page that has a form, and its sole purpose is to capture information. We talked earlier about capturing emails. This is vitally important. All
why
right.
Why don't I actually just go?
Show them.
Yeah, let's go to a landing page on our site just so you can see it on the big screen, the big show. Oh, here. So this is the subscribe. This is the one where you subscribe to our one or more of our four blogs. So you want to just tell them about it?
Yep. So right here, you'll see the landing page. Here we've got a nice little image to grab their attention. You see the cute couple sitting around the iPad. All right. Never miss an update. Tells you big, bold why you should do this. Tells you a little bit about each blog. And over here is a form. Right? Where should we send your updates? Notice the asterisk. We only are requiring submission of first name and email address. You see that? Guess what? The majority of people give us the rest of the information as well. Now, here's where it gets really cool.
Everyone's actually writing down my email address right now.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Like,
email them right now. This is your chance.
Yeah. It's all right. On our website. Too.
Here's something that's really cool. Can you show them another landing page?
Sure. Which one?
Any one of them. Any of the free resources ones. Remember we talked earlier about blog subscriptions, how no one does them anymore? Here's a way you can get drastic increases on your blog subscriptions.
Oh, you know what? It doesn't ask me because I'm already
subscribed. Oh, you're already subscribed.
Yeah.
Ah, yes, another thing. We actually use smart forms because of HubSpot. So if we already have data, it's not going to appear on the form. It's not going to ask you for something we already have received from you. So depending on your web hosting platform, that may or may not be available.
But this is cool, though. This is a good example of some of the demographic or psychographic information I was telling you guys that we're starting to collect.
Yep.
So because I've gone through every form on our website 18 times and all my information is in HubSpot already, I'm starting to get some of these deeper questions that we're starting to ask. So it's asking me, why am I pro-life? And so we give people a couple of different options that they can pick here. And then, so we can, maybe we want to at some point send an email out to people who, maybe right around the election, the people who are politically motivated around the pro-life issue versus people who are religiously motivated around the pro-life issue. And so we're just going to have all that data. How exactly we're going to use it, we haven't completely figured that out yet, but we're starting to collect it. So.
And on all these landing page forms, you don't see it because he's already answered for us. We've added a blog subscription here at the bottom. So all we're requiring, again, name and email. But right there we just say, subscribe to one of our blogs. And we've got them there. That has dramatically increased our blog subscription rate. So if you want to increase it, you can put it on those landing pages. This is what a landing page looks like. In exchange for your email and your first name, we're giving you this entire free book. Sounds pretty cool, right? So that's what the idea of a landing page is. Give them a value proposition. Give them a reason to give you their email address. I will tell you, people are gun shy. You've got to give them a compelling reason or they're not just going to give you their email address. And this is better for you because at the end of the day, we don't want email addresses of people who aren't really interested in what we're talking about because all we're doing is...
Yeah. And to that point, I mean, a good conversion rate on a landing page is around, like a really good one would be like 25%.
Yep.
So if only one out of every four people who comes to this page actually fills it out and gives us their email address, we're actually doing pretty well.
Exactly. So don't be disappointed if three out of four people aren't submitting. That's fine. Those aren't the people you're trying to catch. You're trying to catch the right fish. Mm-hmm. So could you go back to the PowerPoint?
Yep.
Thank you, Vince. So this is the landing page. You've seen what it looks like. You want to use short forms. Do not have seven questions. Do not ask for things you don't need, and do not put asterisks on a bunch of private information. If people see that all they need to submit is their email address, they're happy with that, and they will freely give you everything else. But every additional question on the form provides more friction because it's an additional step between them and getting what they want. So try to keep it to two, three questions, maybe four, but no more than that. Optimize using smart forms. Depending on your web host, you might be able to do this. HubSpot allows you to do it. This allows you to change questions based on the viewer. So if you've already gotten that information from them, you don't need to ask for it again. Incorporate one very good image and optimize the text to convert the visitor into a customer. Concise forms, non-intrusive forms, not deeply personal questions. How many times have you been married? How many sexual partners have you had? Do not ask that question on your download form. You will not get conversions. All right, relevant. If the respondent can see a reason to let you know this information, they're not going to give it to you. So if you're saying, sign up for our free e-blast and asking, what's your mailing address? Why do you need my mailing address? I'm giving you a free e-blast, right? So be careful with that. You don't want a mismatch between what the form asks for and what you're giving them. Because users are smarter than we oftentimes give them credit for. And they'll sniff that out and say, you're wanting my mailing address, so you fill my mailbox with a bunch of asks. Not going to do it, and they don't give it to you. Purposeful. Get the most important information that you need. So ask yourself, what's the most important information, and that's what you should ask for. Contacts. Questions for you to consider. Do you know today who has downloaded your material on your website? Who has visited your website? Those who visited more than 10 times. Who has donated to your center? These are the most important people for you to follow up with. And if you don't know those answers, you want to begin thinking of ways to gather that information. That's where these forms and other things can help you, so you start tracking the people you need to follow up with. Have a database for your contacts. HubSpot will allow you to do this easily, but there's other tools and platforms for that as well. But have a database. You can use Salesforce. You can use a whole bunch of different tools out there. Use gated content. Gated content is anything that you're giving behind the landing page. So think about it. There's a gate there. Only those who are privileged get to enter. In this case, give you an email address. All right? Premium free content like ebooks, how-to guides, presentations can only be accessed through a form. Use that database then for your follow-up email and advertising campaigns, including Facebook and Twitter retargeting.
Go
ahead.
I was going to give an example using
yes.
making life disciples.
Perfect.
Yeah. So when we launched our research about abortion in the church, we initially had it because it was going to be covered by Christianity Today magazine. So that was obviously a really nice way to get this research out there. And so when you came to our website to download the full report, we were just giving it away because it was out there in the public square. We wanted as many people as possible just mm-hmm. to get a hold of it. But then a couple months ago, when kind of the tide of, you know, the tide had kind of gone back in or ebbed, I don't know, ebbed? Yeah. ebb and flow, right? So
yep.
we said, all right, now that we're coming close to actually having the Making Life Disciples product, the actual curriculum, ready to actually start selling to people, we're going to actually use the research as premium content to start collecting email addresses of people that we want to market the product to. So now you can't just come to our website and get the research report. The report is now sitting behind a form. So people have to give us their name and email address, then they get the report, and now we're building an email list of people who we can then start marketing to, and with things like, hey, we saw that you downloaded this research about abortion in the church. Karna has created, you know, the answer to this crisis. It's called Making Life Disciples. Order today. That sort of thing.
Exactly.
And so we're using premium content to create a database of people that we can advertise to.
And then through Facebook and marketing, like we were just talking about earlier, you can take those email addresses, create a link, and create a follow-up ad to people on that. So Hillsdale College did this very successfully with a marketing campaign where they sent an email asking people to sign up, to RSVP for a donor event, right? Anyone here ever done that for one of your center events? Send an email saying, come to our banquet, all right? They took the names of the people who hadn't responded to the email, those email addresses, they fed them into a Facebook ad targeting them saying, don't forget to RSVP. And in the message of the ad, it told them why they're getting seen that ad. And they saw a huge uptick in the number of registrations they got, the number of RSVPs they got, because they were using multi-channel marketing to them. So again, these are ways you can just creatively use and leverage multiple digital marketing techniques to achieve your desired result.
Has anyone in the room here ordered stuff from the CareNet website, the CareSource Resource Center? Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever seen one of our ads on Facebook?
For a new product or a product?
Okay, yeah.
It's working.
So you guys are victims of what Marty's talking about here. We obviously send email all the time, right? You guys get CareNet Connect every Wednesday. Every month you get the CareSource email. But, you know, we know that things go into spam folders. Not everyone subscribes. You just don't notice things. You delete them, whatever. And so we're like, we can't just send email to tell people what's at CareSource. And so we actually started using Facebook advertising.
Yep.
We took our email list, our affiliate email list, and put it into Facebook. And so now, resource ad pop up in your Facebook newsfeed, you know how.
Perfect example.
And those ads, they're actually working.
Yep.
I'm actually very skeptical. I'm like, I don't know if this is going to work, but people are clicking through to the CareNet store through Facebook.
You can track all that through the Facebook ad, and you can put what's called a tracking pixel and embed it on your website on the page you're wanting them to get to. So if you have like a purchase confirmation page, you can embed the pixel there. And Facebook will tell you how many people have gotten to there after clicking on one of your ads. So it's really helpful to be able to do that and see that information in there. And what's really cool is, going back to a question earlier someone had, that is a private ad in the sense that that doesn't go out to the general public. Because let's face it, CareNet Resource Center resources, CareSource resources are really for pregnancy centers. So the average user of our Facebook page is not going to be interested in buying a 25-pack of the BYD magazine. But a center would be.
Yeah.
So they're not seeing the ad, but the centers are. Does that make sense? So you guys have seen that already in action. Closing leads, and this brings you to our break.
Yeah, so let's just do another. We're on the last part of the funnel. So either the right side of the first funnel I showed you, the bottom of the second one, or the top of the third one. But in sticking with our inverted funnel, where you have to push people up because they're going to fall out, we're at the top now. We're like getting that last thing of pushing them over onto the peak of the mountain so that they can make that final decision, take that final action of donating, volunteering, whatever. Now, most of the stuff that I talk about in here is probably going to be most applicable to donor communication, because I think generally your window, your funnel, so to speak, is probably much shorter and smaller and quicker with clients, because it's really probably they find out about you and you probably want them to call you pretty quickly. You're not going to go through a whole series of, you know, sending them a series of four emails over a 1 month period after they first visit your website in order to convince them to come in and make an appointment. So that's going to be much more of a function of a really good homepage on your website that's going to compel folks to, oh, I need to call these folks today. So this is going to be much more of like the longer sort of process that you would go through with somebody like a prospect who hasn't yet given or a donor who you're trying to get to give that next gift. But I think some of the principles, though, I think you'll be able to apply to any situation. So the methods that you're going to use to close leads. So they're a lead. They've already given you their email address. They've already raised their hand and said, I kind of like what you guys are doing. And so now you're closing them. You're turning them into a customer, donor, whatever. So we're going to use emails, workflows, lead scoring, and phone calls, that old-fashioned way. So, so email. So I put the actual definition of email up there, as if you guys might not know what an email is. It's a system for sending messages from one individual to another via telecommunications links between computers or terminals using dedicated software. That's not bad. My definition is it's a reason to contact someone about anything, as long as it's relevant, okay? So I just use email as an excuse to just get out in front of somebody and remind them that I'm there and I'm alive and I have something somewhat relevant to say, even if it's a bad halibut joke. So remember, and I'm gonna remind you of this throughout this entire section. These are people who already signed up, right? So these are people who already expressed some sort of interest. So whenever you get that feeling that, you know, maybe I'm being too invasive or maybe this person doesn't want to hear from me, remember, they already signed up. They already told you that they gave you their email address. So in this day and age, everyone knows that when you give somebody your email address, there's an expectation that you're going to hear from them. Now, obviously, you don't want to send them an email every day. You don't want to send them irrelevant stuff, whatever. But they've already raised their hand, so always remember that. All right, so general principle around email is to remember the 80-20 rule. 80% of your communication with your donors or, you know, in our case, in some respects, potential customers, so people who will buy stuff from the CareSource store, 80% of that you want to be informational, inspirational, educational. So think about if every single email that you got from on Wednesdays, the CareNet Connect email that we send you, think about if every single one of those emails was, buy this resource, it's great. You guys would probably tune out or get annoyed and stop listening. So I think probably more than 80% of the information and the frequency in that email series is informational, inspirational, or educational. And then 20% of your communications should be solicitations, you know, asks to make a purchase, etc. So the 80-20 rule, important rule, and, you know, you don't want this number to get too low because you want people to get used to the idea that you're going to be asking them for stuff. Uh-huh. You know? You got it? And so if you're like, well, you know, I think I'm going to be less annoying and I'm going to do the 90-10 rule, but then you might be less annoying, but you're probably going to see worse results because you're just not asking people for stuff often enough. And again, if people aren't used to the idea of you asking them for stuff, and again, remember, they already signed up, you're gonna kind of hurt your ability to eventually get that donation or that purchase, in our case, purchase from CareSource. You guys aren't selling anything, so. All right, so this is an example of an informational email that I sent out to somebody named Kyle. So I sent this on April 20th, 2016. And I just wanted to point out a couple of things that are important about this email. This, you know, my parents gave me. It's just God, Italian genes, whatever you want to attribute that to. We don't have any control over that. But sorry, I just saw my picture. That's right. Yeah. No. But yeah, that's not a bad picture. Anyway. So first principle, mass personalization. So very simply in this email, it simply means that the guy's name is in there. So this was an email that I sent out to a list of, it was a small list, maybe 50 people, but at least their first name was in there. Now, Artie and I have been talking about some other things that you could do with customization. So we customization or mass personalization, same sort of thing, where you're sending it to a large number of people. That's the mass part, but it's personalized. And so personalizing it based on whether or not they're a single millennial or a married baby boomer or whatever it might be, that's kind of next level stuff. But in this example, I just simply wanted to make sure I wasn't saying, hey, friend, or hello, supporter of CareNet. So just simply having his name in there was personalizing it. And then, you know, I wanted to kind of keep it casual slash relational. So this is somebody on my donor list, somebody that I've interacted with in the past. And so I didn't want to kind of make it sound real, like, stodgy and, you know, mass email sounding. So not sure if you're a fan of podcasts, that sort of thing. So just kind of making it, like, so it looks like a real email that you would actually send to somebody. And then pictures. Pictures are important. Pictures of, you know, faces, again, are, you know, generally good. But we designed this really nice, fancy little new logo for our podcast, so I wanted to put that in there. I wanted to put a picture of me in there. You know, again, just making it a little bit more visually interesting than just text, right? So pictures. And then personal, like it's from me. So putting my name, putting my, you know, my title, my email address, my phone number. You know, I think people just kind of intuitively get that if you're willing to actually list your personal email address and your personal phone number in an email, that you're willing to kind of, you know, get intimate. I don't know if that's the best analogy to use, but scratch that. You're willing to get familiar with them. But so those are just a couple of things to keep in mind. All right, so this is an informational email that I sent to Kyle on April 20th. His response later that day was, hey, Vince, good to hear from you. We're figuring out our finances and plan to support CareNet soon. Thanks for staying in touch! ! So he seemed to really appreciate the fact that I just sent him this email. I didn't ask him for money. I just said, hey, we have this new podcast. I think you might be interested in listening to it. So that was a good sign, right? So I wrote back to him the next day, but I didn't take advantage of the fact that he said we're planning on giving to you soon by saying, here's the link to make your gift. All I did was say, thanks, here's some more information that you might need to review, you and your wife might need to review, in order to eventually make that decision. So I gave him a ministry update, a summary of our important funding needs. Let me know if you have any questions. I'd love to sit down with you. He's local to our office. Blah, 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 blah. Best Vince, right? So I could have jumped the gun and said, oh, he just said he's going to be giving to us soon. I could have just jumped the gun and said, great, here's the link to our donation page. And I could have even put an ask amount in there because I know how much he gave last time. And I could have just said, you know, I know you gave X thousand last time. You know, why don't you give that again? Or, you know, whatever. But I just, you know what? I said, you know what? I'm just going to give him some more information. And then he said, oh, okay. So two months later, he had gotten one more informational update from me via HubSpot. So another mass personalized email that I sent out to my whole list, and he was on that list. It wasn't about our podcast. It was about something else that we were doing, just purely informational. And then I wanted to also follow up. This is where I actually made the ask. So he had already gotten three informational emails from me, and I said, hi, Kyle, per the below, I wanted to let you know that our fiscal year ends on June 30th. So if you do still, in fact, plan on making a gift to CareNet, it would be fantastic if you could do so before the end of the day on Thursday. Okay? So it was still kind of a soft ask, but it was an ask. Because I knew that he sort of committed to making that gift, right? So, hey, Vince, I'll have it in before close of fiscal. Take care. And I just said thank you. And lo and behold, that was June 28th. June 30th is the end of our fiscal year. On June 30th, he made his gift, and he actually gave us $5,000, so which was the same amount he had given us the last two times. So the principle that I want you to get out of that is that I was simply keeping him informed about important, interesting, fun things that CareNet was accomplishing, and also, you know, giving him some more robust documents because he was a high dollar donor, a major donor, some more robust documents to really make him feel as though you know, already talked about social currency and things like that. You know, making him feel, you know, important. Like, because you're important to us, I'm sending you this document with our major funding needs for the year. So these were like hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of programs that, you know, CareNet is planning on doing throughout the year. So that probably made him feel, look, oh, I'm an insider. CareNet, you know, an individual executive from CareNet is sending me this inside information about their funding needs and their ministry update via a personal email. And so that definitely, you know, certainly resonated with him and resulted in the gift. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Notice when Vince's first email was responded to, while it was a mass email, he gave a personal response to it. I can tell you, having worked very few years of my short life span in nonprofits, that that's not always the case. Automated emails get sent, and people forget what email address was on that from name, and they don't see the replies that may be happening. So make sure when you're sending out your automated emails that someone's checking and you know where that address is coming from. So in Vince's case, the automated email went directly to his email address. So he got it in his inbox, Kyle's response. But that allowed him to follow up with them, so you're not leaving responses on the tree. So it can be tempting sometimes, I think, based on what I've seen for nonprofits, sometimes to put the ask right in the email, you know, donate now, and they never check the email that it went to, in which case someone might be asking a question about their donation before making it.
Yeah, yeah. We always try to send our emails from our own, even the mass emails, from our own personal email address. Obviously, you know, the ones that go to like thousands of people, we don't do that. Like
the blogs,
like our yeah, and like the weekend update email that goes to like several thousand people. I don't even know how big that list is now. That doesn't come from a personal email address, but anything like this where I'm emailing all my donors or that sort of thing, we make sure it's from us, from our name and our email address. So, yeah, sure. He was already on the contact list. He had kind of out of the blue made a donation to the organization last year, and he happened to live in the town next to where our office is, and so I called him up or emailed him. I forgot if I emailed him or called him. And just said, "Hey, I'd love to meet with you. Our office is right down the street from where you are." And we ended up actually meeting in person. And then I've just kind of stayed in touch with him since then. Yeah. So I think him and his wife, they wanted to make a donation to a pro-life organization and just started doing some research online and found CareNet. And when they found CareNet, they saw that CareNet's headquarters office was located basically right next door to where they live, and so that helped. So I've been in touch with him. In fact, I actually just got an email from him this morning because I invited him to the Values Voter Summit, which is taking place in Washington, D.C. later this week. CareNet has a table, and I said, you and your wife should go to this. We can get you seated at our table, blah, blah, blah. So just giving him stuff, whether it's information or seats at a table or whatever, in between those times where I know I have to ask him for money. So, go ahead. Yeah, well.
I'll sign up on the
right.
The reason I yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Phone call,
well, it is, absolutely. And believe me, I'm not great at it, but one of the ways that you could do that is applying some of the stuff that we've talked about today in terms of creating and providing really compelling content to people where they have to give you their email address. And then you can start to communicate with those people over time, and then the all-stars are going to kind of start rising to the top. You're going to see their responses growing if you eventually start asking them for donations and things like that. Because you've kind of given them a lot of stuff, it's going to be easier to ask them for money at some point. And I'm going to actually go into something in a moment that'll get a little bit further down that path, too. So
and
stay tuned.
Vince,
yeah.
Do you want to mention what we've done with the overturned Roe v. Wade petition? Because I think that's one of the ways we've seen new donors coming into the funnel.
Yeah, that's a great point. Actually, why don't we actually show them how that works.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right.
So, you know what? Yeah, let me, I can, why don't we go to lifenews.com, actually. I'm sorry, you had a question, too, while we're pulling this up. Yeah. Yeah.